Well, good morning again. If you have a Bible, if you would open with me to Genesis chapter 27, Genesis 27, almost all the way back at the beginning. Two weeks ago, I had the privilege of giving my daughter away to a young man named Nathan. It's the second child that has gotten married of the four that belong to us, and it was really quite an extraordinary day. It was different for me because usually I'm the officiating pastor, and so I normally, everyone kind of comes up and stands in front of me. As this case was, I had Karis on my arm, and I escorted her up to Daniel, my son, who was up at the front, and then he did the exchange, and then I swapped places with him, and he got into the groom's party where he belonged. And I got to be in the best seat in the house. So I thought, because this situation was unique, that I wanted to do something that I had never seen before done by any officiating pastor, and that is that I wanted to give them my blessing once I got up in front of them. And, you know, Daniel said, "Who gives this woman to be married to this man?" I said, "Her mother and I do." I handed Karis off to them, and then I stood in front of them, and I said, "I want to do something different. And I've never seen this done before, so I'm going to make it up as I go, although I've thought about this and prayed about it for a while. But I want to give both of you my blessing." And I looked at Karis, and I said, "Karis, I adore you. You're a treasure to me. You are amazing and beautiful, and I love you with a full heart, and you make my heart full." And then I looked at Nate, and I said, "Nate, I love you like a son. You have come into our family, and we have embraced you as a son, and it's been that way for a long time. They've been dating for quite a while." And I verbally affirmed him, and I said, "Look, I love you, and I respect you as a man. And I want to say that you are a man worthy of my daughter. And so today give her to you in marriage." Well, obviously I didn't make it through it without crying. Pretty much they didn't either. But there was something about that moment that was amazing. Now, I realize that not all of us get the mic and, you know, the suits and all that stuff and everything, but we don't necessarily have a chance to give our blessing in that sort of a way. But I think there's something in all of us that wants to receive a blessing in such a manner, that wants to receive the blessing of our parents, in particular our dads. We're wired for it by God. We've been wired to be blessed by God and to receive blessing from God. It's part of the way that we've been built by Him. And so when someone says something encouraging to you, and think back for a moment, when at a time when someone said something encouraging to you, it has this sort of melting effect, and it has this bolstering effect that you get more confidence by having that kind of affirmation and approval expressed in gestures and in words, don't you? We call that the blessing effect, if you will. Now, on the other hand, because that's such a powerful experience, the withholding of that, or that turned around and those words being angry words or critical and judgmental words, those and the withholding of that blessing can have a devastating effect on any person, male or female. We'll call that, if you will, the cursing effect. Today, what I want to talk to you is about giving the blessing. Last week we talked about breaking the cycle, or the pattern of our family history of the things that we don't want to carry forward into the future. And I hope that you had a chance to think about that. And if you didn't have a chance to be here for that, I'd encourage you to go either on Facebook or on our website and listen to it. I think it's important, not because it's really super well written or delivered, but the concepts are very important here. This morning, what I want to talk to you about is what it means to give our blessing to our children and those we love, and then in turn, how that we go about doing that. What it means and how to do it. To start this off, it's really important to say that this is an incredible biblical idea, that blessing is deeply rooted in the whole biblical story, but it starts out in the Old Testament, and that's where it brings us to Genesis 27. And here we have two twin brothers, Jacob and Esau, and they have their father, Isaac, who is going to give his blessing. Now, if you know the story, Jacob he's a trickster and a bit of a usurper. He's the younger of the twins, and he kind of, through trickery, deceives his father into giving him the blessing that he was going to give to Esau, his brother. And so that brings us into Genesis 27, and I'm going to read to you from verse 27. It says this, and so Jacob has received Isaac's blessing, and Isaac says, he went to him and kissed him, and Isaac blessed him and said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you heaven's dew and earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed." Now, interestingly enough, in ancient times, the blessing of a patriarch over a whole family had a kind of prophetic authority too. And so once that was actually given, it could not be revoked. And so shortly on the heels of Jacob essentially stealing Esau's blessing, he had already stolen his birthright, actually stolen, he'd already sold off his birthright. Esau comes in, and it says that in verse 34, when Esau heard his father's words, that is his blessing given to Jacob, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me too, my father." And then down at verse 38, do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father. And then Esau wept aloud. You see in this particular story that a father's blessing is powerful, and without it, it's devastating. It's crushing. Later on, Jacob has a chance to bless his own sons. He has 12. And he gives these sons his blessing, and each one gets a unique blessing. He doesn't just limit it to one. His blessings are hopeful, really word pictures of what he sees in each one, and he pronounces these, prophesies it over them. Here are some examples of that. In verses 9 and 10 of Genesis 49, it says, "You are a lion's cub, Judah. Like a lion, he crouches." And then down in verse 21, it says, "Naphtali is a doe set free. He brings beautiful words." And then Joseph is a fruitful vine near a spring whose branches climb over a wall. All these word pictures are pictures of promise and of hope. They are pictures of identity and of really high value. Going a little bit, we're going to go backward just a little bit here, but that blessing is intended to be something that is carried on from generation to generation. That it's that God has intended for, especially the dads, but the dads and the moms, to be able to give their children their blessing so that they can give their children the blessing so that they can give their children the blessing. You see what I'm saying? And so this is Abraham is the one who got it started, and the Lord is the one who started by blessing Abraham, and then Abraham goes from there. In Genesis 12, verses 2 and 3, it says, the Lord is speaking this to Abraham. He says, "I will bless you, and you will be a blessing to others. And all the families of the earth will be blessed through you." And so a blessing is an investment in the future from one generation to the next, to the next. At Karis's wedding, after the ceremony was over and we were at the time when people were making toasts, my father-in-law, Bill, stood up and he put his hands on Karis and Nate and he gave them his blessing. One generation to the next, to the next, to the next. And these words, they really matter. They're not trivial. I think that for us, because of social media, and we just are words, 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 and words, and it seems like all words have no meaning because there's so many words. But it's not that way. That your blessing and the words that you speak over people that affirm and bless are powerful. Conversely, the words that you speak over people that are cursing and are negative, they are powerful as well. Fast forward into the New Testament. We have this experience that's shown to us at the beginning of three of the Gospels, and that is Jesus being baptized. And when Jesus is baptized, it says that that the Holy Spirit came to him in bodily form and descended on him like a dove, it says. This is Luke chapter 3. And a voice from heaven said, "You are my dearly loved son, and you bring me great joy." What's happening there? Jesus is getting his Father's blessing. This is really important for all the peoples in the ancient world. I think it goes right over our heads. We would look at that and think, well, this somehow validates that Jesus came from God and has the Father's approval, so therefore we should listen to him. That's not what's happening. He is getting his Father's blessing here. And he is going to carry that blessing on and then give it to you and to me. Again, I think that most of us, it sort of just washes over us as something really not all that significant. But this is very significant. Anyone in the ancient world would have said, he has the blessing of heaven. So Jesus is the recipient of this enormous and generous love and approval and affection and blessing. Now, what I want to talk to you about this morning are the five elements of a biblical blessing. And I am borrowing lock, stock, and barrel from John Trent and Gary Smalley. No apologies. This is really good stuff. It's not mine. The illustrations are, but this is coming from somebody else, and it's coming from the Word. And so basically, when in their book, The Blessing, and I want to highly recommend this to all of you, whether you have kids or whether you don't, whether you're way past that or whether you're not, you all have been given incredible power and authority in your words to speak blessing and to give blessing to the people in the world around you, both those close in and those in your neighborhood and those in your world. And so I want to encourage you to take the book. I bought it years ago. I think I had thumbed through it. I read it all the way through this week. Here are the five elements of a biblical blessing. Firstly, and I'm just going to hit these and then we'll hit these individually, but I want to give you the high view. Firstly, appropriate and meaningful touch. Secondly, spoken message. It's spoken. Thirdly, that it is attaching those touch and spoken words, attach a high value to the person receiving them. Thirdly, that it speaks of a special future, a hopeful future for that person that's being blessed. And fifthly, a commitment, a genuine commitment to actually see it through, not just to kind of do a drive-by blessing. So as I said before, every human being on the planet has been wired to receive and to give blessing. But I want to say to you this morning that this is especially true for you parents. You have been given a very special privilege and a very special responsibility to be a blessing and to give your blessing to your children. And it's not just a one and done thing, it's a continual kind of a thing. But God has given this to you. And every single one of you has a kind of power that is really unparalleled on the planet. There's all kinds of guns and weaponry and bombs, but nothing quite like these words and this kind of blessing that you have to give. It will change the trajectory and the future of the people that you love if you are wise with it. It has the power to empower our children and transform their lives, and withholding it is devastating, as I said. So every single one of us have this on us. And I like the way that John Trent, the author of The Blessing, said it. He said that each one of us have been built by God to be agents of blessing. You might want to write that down. I don't think it's in your outline. But you are called to be an agent of blessing, and especially dads. I think that for most of us, we don't tend to think that our dads' blessing is all that big a deal, except for that when we don't have it, it's crippling. But our dad's blessings as a dad are incredibly powerful and important. If you receive the blessing from your dad, chances are you are living a life in your adulthood that where you're confident and you have a lot of different things kind of going for you, and you tend to see the future hopefully. And if you didn't receive it, you tend to be more negative. I know that that's a broad brush, but it actually holds true across almost every socioeconomic category in our culture. It's that powerful. So the first one. The first of the five elements of a biblical blessing is appropriate and meaningful touch. An Old Testament patriarch would put his hands on his sons when he blessed them. And the laying on of hands was really important. Jesus actually was incredibly generous with his touch during his earthly ministry. He takes kids in his arms and blesses, even to the chagrin of his own disciples. He takes them into his arms and he blesses them. He reaches across all kinds of cultural and religious boundaries into the touch-starved lives of a person suffering from leprosy. He reaches in. What ends up happening? The guy says, "Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean." Jesus says, he touches him and says, "I am willing, be clean." To the touch starved, Jesus is touch. Jesus grabs people by the hand. He touches people's eyes. Jesus is, if you will, high touch. And he always has been and he always will be. And what God wanted to say to us about himself, he said most perfectly and sweetly through his son Jesus. You want to know what the heart of God is like? Look at Jesus. He touches and he touches and he's touched, and power goes out of him when he's touched. But there's touch with your God. There's touch with your God. And that touch makes all the difference. I'm going to read something from John Trent. He writes this: "Before a word of blessing was spoken, there was a laying on of hands, a hug, a reaching out to touch. Appropriate touch conveys in powerful nonverbal ways our affection and affirmation, preparing the way for our words." It's simply incredible that the avalanche of studies and research that assert that every single human being needs touch. That when babies, and actually a series of studies that was going on in, I believe, in Russian orphanages, where lots and lots of babies were just dying for no apparent reason. But what happened was they would be born, they would be in an orphanage, and they would be shipped to an orphanage, they didn't get any touch, and they died. We call that now failure to thrive. Does that make sense? On the conversely, that when preemies, and lots of studies have been done for this, where premature babies have had parents that are massaging their feet and putting their hands all over them, and that actually stimulated real physiological bone growth simply by having that touch. That touches activates natural processes that without the touch, those processes are not there. Again, the studies are unequivocal, and they're everywhere. So it's worth looking up, but it's important to say that touches, it creates something. It creates a sense of human and personal closeness. It creates a sense of self in relation to another. I know that I am valued. It creates and conveys relational closeness. Perhaps you've heard the story before of a little girl. It was lying beneath her covers in a giant thunderstorm, and the thunder claps going over and over and over again. She calls for her father. "Dad, would you come into my room? I need you." She wants his comfort and his reassurance. He comes into the room. He sits with her. He prays for her. And he says, "Honey, you know that God is with you even in these big thunderstorms." And she said, "Dad, I know that. But right now I just need somebody with skin on." Touch. You and I have been made for that. It doesn't matter if your top love language is touch or not. We are all agents of the blessing, and touch is important. Now, for you parents who are not touched people, or perhaps are wounded or broken in that department, I want to encourage you, you need to learn this. You're going to have to get outside your comfort zone. Some of you are like, "You jerk, how dare you say that?" I'm saying it because you need to do that. And part of this gospel stuff is us getting outside of what's comfortable to us, denying ourselves, and loving well. And this is that. Secondly, spoken message. So you have meaningful, appropriate touch, and there's obviously touch that's not appropriate, but there's touch that's appropriate as well. But then that coming on the heels of that, there always in a biblical blessing is a speaking of that. Isaac spoke his blessing over Jacob. Well, words were powerful and always have been powerful vehicles of blessing. You can be meaningfully touched, but the words must be spoken for that blessing to be registered in the soul of any human being. And so I like the way that John Trent says this, that biblically a child wasn't left to fill in the blanks, whether they were valuable to a parent or grandparent. Words were verbalized, including written words today, and that can place unconditional love and acceptance into the heart of a child or a loved one. So think back on a time when somebody spoke something to you that really encouraged you and affirmed you. Think. How powerful was that? It does something to us when people observe something about us and then draw attention to it, or they catch us doing it right, and they say, you know what, that was awesome. You did great. Those different kinds of things, they create something in us. Around the Branch, in every holiday or birthday, especially birthdays, we do this thing called the love spoon. And it's debatable what country that this thing comes from, but we'll just say that it comes from the country of Branchness. And what we do is we the person whose birthday it is holds the love spoon, and everyone around the table goes and says something affirming and something that they love about that person. And obviously, we Branches, we're an emotional bunch. But I've found that even with people that are not emotional bunches, when you get affirmed, it melts you. And as one person after another, now there are, there are 10 of us with the grandparents in this whole, locally here a lot of times. And so there's a lot of affirmation that's being exchanged. But when it does, the person that's receiving that is, they just melt underneath it. And eyes are wet and hearts are warmed and melted, and blessing is given. And blessing is received. Go get out of your silverware drawer the dorkiest spoon that you've got and give it to the dad in the family today and shower him with praise and adoration and affirmation and approval. Catch him doing it right and he'll do more of it. Do you see what I'm saying? That the blessing must be spoken, because words are powerful. James 3 talks about this, that the negative power of words, the steering power of words, that it's small, but it makes a huge difference. And so parents, I want to challenge you today to be generous with your verbal affirmation, expressing and affirming the value, the potential, the ability, the effort that your kids are making in all kinds of different things. Adult kids, it doesn't matter the age of your children. All of your children, no matter what package that they're in, I'm 59, I still like it, right? All of us do. All of us are still built for this, and we give it and we flourish when we are given that kind of affirmation, and we wilt when we're not. And so I want to challenge you into this, that you give the physical touch and you give the verbal affirmation, the verbal message of blessing. I love you. You don't have to say, I bless you. It has all kinds of different, it's more art than it is science here. But you speak these words of blessing over your children, and they are powerful in building them up. Maybe sometimes you need to write it, but I want to encourage you, speak it more than write it. But some of you need to write it so that it has some degree of permanence in it too, because there's something about the written word that's powerful that way. But let the message be heard. Amen? Amen? Thirdly, you have the touch, you have the message, and the message is conveying high value. Biblically, when a father spoke his blessing, it conveyed esteem and value. At Jesus' baptism, and I'm going to give you a paraphrase, but this is all right there. It's not literally in the words, but in the moment it is. The father, Jesus, comes up out of the water, and the father says, "You are my boy. You are my son. I love you. I adore you. I am so delighted and pleased with you." Now, what do you think that did to Jesus? He wasn't like, "Oh, whatever." No, what is that? What happens when you get the Father's, when you and I are worshiping, and every once in a while the clouds part and the love of God pierces through, and what does it do? It melts us. We become a heap of jelly at that point in time. Why? Because the Father's love does that to us, but it does that with his very own Son too. And then at the end of John 17, Jesus says that he has revealed the Father and will continue to reveal the Father to us, so that the love that the Father has for him would now be in us, and that he himself would be in us. It's this incredibly generous ascribing high value kind of blessing that the Father gives to us. And so John Trent would say it this way: what words do you say or write? Well, the word blessing itself carried the idea that the person you're blessing is of incredible worth and value, even as an imperfect person. In short, you're helping a child get the picture that you see things in their life today that make them special, useful, and of great value to you and to me. So we speak these words of affirmation and value, and when we do, it builds security in a child. It imparts confidence, it imparts courage, and it imparts stability. And when kids receive these kind of messages, their lives tend to soar, especially if their parents are not trying to make them what they feel like they have to be, but are partnering with God in the parenting adventure. How do you do this? Well, in the Old Testament, they used a lot of word pictures, and I think word pictures are very powerful. You have in Jacob blessing Naphtali, it says, Naphtali is a doe set free. Now, there's a picture for you of a doe in springtime. You've seen Bambi, right? You know these things. And so Naphtali is a doe set free. He gives beautiful words. What's he saying? Naphtali, I see that you're a creative type. You're an artist. And these things come out of you that are beautiful. And the things that you speak, they're beautiful. He sees that in his son. He calls it out and he blesses it. Karis, my daughter that just got married, she's an artist. She's the most artistic of all of us. And everybody knows that, and everyone can affirm that without any real trouble. Well, I was trying to think, as I was praying through this, I was thinking, okay, so what word picture would I use to describe Karis? And here's where my mind went with this, and I think this really works for me. That is that Karis is a day of springtime at full bloom. That flowers are everywhere. Colors are exploding, pinks and blues and yellows. It's beautiful, it's creative. And the beauty is both in the large wash all the way down to the filaments and the little tiny veins of each leaf and petal. This is my Karis. I had a chance yesterday to sit down and speak those words over her. She just, you know, we both just cried. But those word pictures have power. Do you see what I'm saying? The beautiful thing about a word picture, as just opposed to just words, is that the word picture has a kind of a sticking power to it. So with that, Karis is going to remember, she reminds me of a spring day at full bloom. Do you hear the power of that? Think for yourself. Ask the Lord. He'll help you. He will help you. That's the third one. So you have meaningful, appropriate touch. You have spoken message. You have, what's the third one that I said? Attaching high value. There's my brain. And then the fourthly, these words also express a special future. That is frequently in Old Testament blessing narratives that you have this speaking of a blessed future and a blessed purpose. So in the blessing that Jacob is giving his sons, he says, Judah, you're going to be a ruler, and the scepter's not going to depart from your line. In fact, Jesus comes from that line. So we have this, and you have Abraham blessed to be a blessing, and you and I now are in line with Abraham to be, we've been blessed by God to be a blessing to others. John Trent says it this way: with our touch, with our words that attach high value, come a response in a child or a loved one's heart that can be nothing short of transformational. The light goes on in their heart and mind that the way that God has made them, that they can do more than they ever dreamed in living out their God-honoring future. That there's this potential that's instilled in them, and then they become bold. If they're even timid introverts, they have a kind of boldness about them as a timid introvert because their parents have instilled in them this kind of confidence. To this day, Jewish households and Seventh-day Adventist households, for that matter as well, they will speak words over their children from their very earliest years. You're going to be a brilliant doctor or a brilliant lawyer or a judge. You're going to be a legislator. You're going to be a person of incredible influence, and you're going to make a big difference in the world. And you know what's interesting? So many times it actually happens because their parents spoke these things into them. When our kids from their earliest years, we had heard a phrase spoken about the destiny of this generation that's growing up now. And the millennials have got all kinds of trash talk going on about them. But there was a hopeful term that we heard that somebody said, this group of kids that are growing up, they are a chosen generation. They are chosen by God and destined by God to make an impact, sort of like Queen Esther was destined by God to make an impact. And so we latched a hold of those words very early. Daniel was born. While he was sleeping in his crib, we would just put our hands on him and pray those things over him. When the kids, after they would have been, we prayed it over all of our kids for pretty much their whole lives. We prayed, you're a chosen generation, that you've been destined by God for impact and bringing the kingdom of God to the earth. And so one is a pastor, one is a counselor, therapist, works in human resources, one is going to be a nurse. Every one of our children is built for something from God to make a difference. And we as parents have this powerful inheritance to pass on to them, that we give them our touch, we give them a message. We give them a message of hope and blessing. We give them high value. And we impart to them the expectation of a beautiful future. This is powerful. And this is you and this is me. And then the last one. Everything is for naught if there's not a genuine commitment to see it through. And so John Trent says it this way. Blessing a child doesn't mean that we never discipline them or point out areas for growth. But children know at an incredibly deep level if they have their parents' blessing, if that mom or dad, grandmother, aunt, uncle, or other loved one really sees high value in them, even during the tough times. Genuine commitment is an unconditional commitment to an imperfect person that says, as long as I have breath, I will be there to seek to build these five elements of blessing into your life and your life story. And so a father who says, son, I want to teach you how to throw a baseball and I want to spend all this time for you, but he has too much time at work and he never makes the time. What's the message being sent? There's an old song from my generation called The Cat's in the Cradle that talked about this idea, dad, I want to be just like you. And he turns out to be just like his dad. He has no time for his kids, just like his dad had no time for him. That it takes a commitment, that we speak these words and we follow it up with commitment. And I want to tell you parents here today in particular that the investment that you make in your children is the single greatest impact you can have on your carbon footprint on this planet that you'll ever make. No matter how many people that you lead to Christ or how many people that you feed meals to, your children are your mark. Your children are your mark. Take that in, please. Take that in. That this is something that God has given us. It's a precious thing to be commissioned with this. But like the Spider-Man movie says so well, with great power comes great. That's it. With great power comes great responsibility. That we are in this place now of great power and we have a responsibility. So here are a couple of things just to round this out. I want to say to you that you need to be persistent and not give up. There have been times with my children that I've wanted to give up. I wrote an article about part of my journey with one of my daughters, and we were not getting along. And the Lord said, just move in her direction. And so I started moving in her direction. She would get up in the room, and I would just move toward her. I would touch her. She couldn't go anywhere without me moving in her direction. It drove her crazy for a time. It didn't help our relationship. It was not a magic pill. But what it did was, over time, it continued to build connective tissue until the tissue was strong enough to sustain relationship once more. Move in her direction. Move in her direction. Secondly, It is learning skills and discipline and the art of blessing. I was completely illiterate to all this stuff at the beginning, but I got better. I got better. I just started practicing these things because I knew that they made a difference. I had to learn and practice, learn and practice, learn and practice. And my wife, she helped me with gentle, you know, hey, that was really good. She caught me doing it right. She said, that could have gone a little differently, you know, at other times, and helped me to learn how to bless well. And she still helps me to learn how to bless well. Parents, we need to help each other do a good job at this. This is not just an individual thing. It's a partnership. And then lastly, this is not a one and done type of a deal. Hey, I said I love you. Now get down and give me 25. It's not that. I mean, honestly, I've heard stories of weddings where the groom said he said he loved his bride at the wedding and didn't say it ever after that. You know how long those marriages lasted? Not very long. Because there's something about that incessant kind of affirmation that really causes it to be sticky and believable. And if you say it once and think that it's over, that's not the way that kids' hearts are. Kids' lives are porous, and they need to be continued to be poured into in order for these things to stay in there. Because it seems like you pour it in, it just goes right out. You pour it in, it goes right out. But eventually, the stuff sticks. Eventually, it sticks. So reiterating this, appropriate, meaningful touch, spoken message, attaching high value, special future, genuine commitment. This is something meaningful that every single person in this room has to give. Every one of you has this to give. I want to call you now. I want to call you to make a commitment to be an agent of blessing in the lives of the people that you love. And so this is where I'm ending this message. I want to ask you today to, in your own heart, put your flag in the soil and say, I choose now to commit myself to you. And by the grace, all the grace and strength that you give me, Lord, I am turning the ship in a different direction, and I'm going to be a blessing to the people that you have put into my world. And this goes for both people that are parents, and if you're not a parent, all this stuff still applies to you because they're people that you love, right? And some of us, my dad gave me none of this, except for an occasional drive-by, I'm proud of you, son. But I got this from some other people that were very generous with me, some other friends and some other important adults. And it's really important to say, I think, too, that for... especially for teenagers, it's that other adult that's not in your family that says affirming things about you and can point things out and catch you doing it right. Those people are super important in the life of a teenager, because at some point in time, the teenager stops believing what their parents think. A lot of them do. And then when they do, at least there's other people like Reggie and you and Melissa and other different people in our lives that will keep on speaking those words of value, keep on speaking those words of blessing until we've moved in their direction and we've rebuilt the bridge and we still have relationship. Do you hear what I'm saying? Every one of us is in this spot. But make no mistake about it, I have come this morning to get your commitment to do this. I have not come here just to hear myself speak. And so I want to ask you this morning to commit to this, male and female, young and old. I don't care. Every one of you, I'm asking you to commit to this. Now think. Don't make a glib commitment on this because it's a big one. I want to ask you, will you commit with me to be a blessing to those people who God has put into your life? Let's all stand up.